Well, welcome back, everybody. Good morning to you. 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, and for the next 2 hours, we're going to be talking about car repair issues, car repair problems, and you're welcome to join us. All you have to do is just give us a call. Gil is the one that answers the phone, and you just tell him what your name is, and that's really about it. Then Gil whispers in my ear, and I have a headset on, and I'm 100 miles away from him, but he talks to me in my right ear, and I hear you in my left ear. So he just says, Tim's next, or something like that. 602-508-0960. One of the things in the car repair business, and I think I'm comfortable in speaking for most shop owners that have been around, more than a couple of years. The thing that bothers us the most, and the thing that's, forget the bother part, the thing that scares us the most is when you get a car that's brought in where somebody tried to fix it and couldn't and made a hell of a mess. That happens a lot. The question is, I think I can speak for most shop owners, if you're a first-time customer, we're probably not going to take that. But if you've been a customer since 1980, then yeah, we're going to take it. So we're going to try to be somebody's hero, but there's 50-50 chance that we're going to be the dog and the goat by saying we can't do what we tried to do because somebody screwed it up before us. So we're going to have to take the whole top of the engine apart to fix this problem. So it's going to be labor to take the heads off, that one head off, and put it back on. And the intake manifold has to come with it. Then we're going to have to send it to the machine shop, and he's going to have to weld that hole up. Then he's going to have to re-drill it and re-thread it. So it's going to be a big deal because it's too late. It's too messed up. So we get this is not a hero kind of message. We fixed this, but it's exactly what I'm talking about. Check to see if we can remove the broken off spark plug in the cylinder head. That's what the customer said. Then in our repair orders, then there's a space, and then we write down to answer him in writing. We removed the easy out that was stuck in the head. Now, what happened, this is a motorcycle, and what happened was is the center of the spark plug broke. So they did get the porcelain part, the white part of the spark plug broke, probably when they went to install it, and then they pulled that out, but then they stuck an easy out, and an easy out is a device that goes into a round hole, but it has teeth on it. And when you screw it counterclockwise, the teeth bite. And the easy out is also tapered. It's small on one end and it gets a lot bigger on the other. So you tap it in until the teeth bite. Then you put a socket on it and you gently turn it counterclockwise to bring the rest of the spark plug out. So, first of all, we had to get the easy out. Because it wasn't the correct one. It wasn't the one that needed to be used. And so we had to get that out first. Now, you'd think, okay, well, Mark, if you turn it left, it bites. You turn it right, and it comes out. That's true. But it's deep within there. You can't see where you're working. And your big fear is you drop that into the cylinder, and now you got to pull the head. So we just went from something that could take an hour or two of labor to something that's going to take 10 or 12 hours. So it's not as easy as it sounds. So we first removed the easy out that was stuck in the head, and it wasn't the correct one. And we worked then the spark plug back and forth to what we suspect was damaged threads. And then we finally got the broken piece out, and the threads were damaged but not terrible. And then we ran a tap through the threads, blew out the cylinder, because the cylinder has all the metal that we've been working on. We installed a new spark plug, and we drove it, and everything was fine. But the 1, 2, 3 is we have to get the easy out that's stuck in the head out. Then we had to use the correct easy out and work the broken spark plug back and forth. Now, at this particular time, we're vacuuming that cylinder. So we're like a doctor that's doing orthoscopic surgery. On one hand, we have this little suction thing. And on the other hand, we're kind of cleaning this up. And then we got a light on our head, and we're looking inside the engine. And it's not brain surgery, but, you know, for cars it is. So we ended up getting it out, and I like how the staff wrote it up, because we blew out the cylinder and we installed the new spark plug, and then we went and drove it. Okay, well, then we're done. And it didn't blow the spark plug out. Had it blown the spark plug out, the threads we cleaned up, and we felt like the threads were good, and we could torque the spark plug to the position it needed to be torqued and not pull the threads out. So there was kind of, but we had already walked all this through. So it was $242.79, but really it was $225 labor plus environmental charges, and there's some sales tax in there. The idea is that an hour and a half time it took us to do it, but this would have been easier if we'd have been the first ones there. So many of you ladies have husbands, and many of you husbands have young boys, and there's a time where you got to raise the red flag and go get help. Otherwise, it's going to cost you. Now, there's been times where this came to us where the whole thing was just a mess, and there was no possibility we were going to be able to get anything out of that hole. So we have a broken spark plug, then we have an easy out that's been hammered in there, and neither one of them's coming out. That's all there is to it. So you have to take the head off and work from the inside and bring that whole unit out. So it's, and there's a lot of shops in town that could do this. Kurtz up north, Action, Strictly Diesel could do it. Thompson's Auto Repair in Mesa could do it. Blackwell can do it up on 40th and Greenway. On the west side of town, S&S Tire can do this. Who else am I thinking about over there? There's Larry Harker's. He could do it. So there's lots of shops that can pull this off, but it's just better when you get to a point where you're really in trouble, then just stop, and find a shop that's been around a long time and that can take this kind of stuff in stride. And then last week, I'm gonna take the call in just a second. Last week we were talking about the Tesla, and I asked about the Tesla because the Model S does 0 to 60 in 2 seconds, and we had an accident reconstructionist guy call me who has my personal cell phone, and he says that there's no way they can do that with normal tires and a normal roadway because of the friction. You would just spin the tires and you would never get to that. And then there's somebody else called in and said, well, there's an asterisk and it says on a prepared roadway. So then the accident reconstruction guy's name's Jim. He says, well, if it was, you know, sticky like tar and the tire never slipped on the roadway, then yes, it would be capable of that. But he was talking about 1.6 G's and 1.7 G's and all that kind of stuff. I think the lesson to be learned here is that many times the numbers they're given for horsepower or torque or 0 to 60 mile an hour is under very doctored conditions. And I'm not quite sure that most of my listeners are going to care if the car will do 0 to 60 in 2 seconds or 2 and a half seconds or 2 and 3 quarter seconds. Really, who cares? If you're that excited, then there's lots of cars out there that will do that. But on the Tesla, the second question is how much electricity did we use on a wide open throttle from a dead stop to 60 miles an hour compared to, you know, just a nice gentle takeoff from a traffic light kind of my hot cup of coffee's between my legs and I don't want to spill it, that kind of a takeoff. So it was just an interesting talk about silly stuff like that. Who's on the phone, Gil?
We have Steve.
Steve, good morning.
Yeah, good morning. I remember you in the past talking about putting some brake fluid, possibly in oil, to expand a leaking seal. I have a car that's just seeping a little bit of oil. It hasn't started hitting the ground, but maybe once, but I smell it. So it's dropping on the exhaust. Taking it in Wednesday to have them looked at. And the guy seems to think it might be a plate that they might be able to fix. But in the event that it's... can you run over that part about putting a little bit of brake fluid in the oil to help expand that? Or did I hear you wrong?
No. Brake fluid causes rubber to slightly expand because many of the components in your braking system, like the cups on the wheel cylinders and the O-rings and stuff on the calipers, are rubber. So we can't have brake fluid deteriorate that. We have to kind of swell that rubber just a little bit. So in the old days, we used to put brake fluid in, and on a 5-quart system, I've seen people put a third of a pint in. And frankly, okay, it's a hydraulic fluid, and so is oil. This isn't going to hurt anything. It's going to throw the oil out of spec a little bit, but what you're hoping that's going to happen is it's going to cause this rubber device to swell. Now, think about this. If this has a bearing and then a seal, when the seal goes bad, it's almost because the bearing goes bad or the bushing goes bad and allows the shaft to wobble. And when it wobbles, the seal leaks. You're not going to fix that kind of seal. And you're not going to fix the seal that's hard and cracked. So it's kind of it's a plan B, and I've seen it work more than once or twice in my whole life. I've seen it work more than 10 times in my life. Now, I'm going to admit to you that I've probably tried it 30 times, and my success rate is small. But you can also go to a different viscosity and oil to see if you can control it that way. And
okay, and it is a 2004 with 80,000 miles.
2 minutes.
So when I get the diagnosis back, if it is, like they said, it's a seal, that would be something to try. But I do understand, like you're saying, if it's a bearing going out, it's not, you know, it's kind of irrelevant because it could do more harm than good.
And, one other thing, you have a PCV valve system. And a PCV valve system, I want you to picture on one side of the motor we have an air filter because air is going into the engine. And on the other side of the motor, we have a vacuum cleaner attached. So what we're basically doing is we're evacuating the fumes inside the engine and we're sending them out the exhaust. That's called PCV, positive crankcase ventilator. When that system goes down because the filter on the inlet side is old and ugly and stupid and dirty, or the PCV valve hasn't been replaced in 100 years, then we develop pressure within the crankcase, and then we start seeing leaks like you're saying. 80,000 miles, three times around the girth of the earth, so it's not like it's chicken feed miles. But
1 minute.
During this oil change, I would suggest that you ask them to replace or look at, maybe even replace, it's not going to be $20 in parts, but the breather element and the PCV valve. I would suggest you do that. That's a better bet.
All right. Thank you very much. Have a blessed Thanksgiving.
Thank you very much, and same to you and your family and all of you. Hopefully you're going to be with family, and hopefully they're going to get along, and they're not going to be like my family where everybody gets drunk and starts fighting with one another. It's not true. I'm just teasing you. I do remember a time that as we walked towards a house for a, I don't know if it's Thanksgiving or Christmas, I remember a time that the women were running out with their kids underneath their arms, and evidently there was some kind of altercation in the backyard, and that's about all I'm going to tell you, but it's something I still remember to this day. Anyway, 602-508-0960, the lines are wide open. There's five of them. If you have a car question, you can. Any kind of question, any kind of dispute, any kind of argument you have with your wife about how to do this or how to do that, I'm pretty good at that, and we'll be right back. Well, welcome back, everybody. 20 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. You're more than welcome to join the show. It's a car show, and if you have a car question or if you have a discussion that husband and wife can't agree on how fast to go or what kind of oil to use or whatever, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. If you have a recent repair and you got the work order in front of you and you're uncomfortable with what you're reading, then without saying the name of the shop, you're welcome to call. And we'll kind of go over it, and I'll kind of decipher the jargon that we're well known on using, and sometimes it's not the appropriate way to describe what we did or what we didn't do or for why we did what we did, that kind of stuff. 602-508-0960. Blackwell Automotive is a shop up in that northeast quadrant of the valley. I can't really find any other shops I like up there, but Blackwell does a really good job. He's at 40th and Greenway. He's been around a long time. He does everything from oil changes to engine swaps, domestics and imports, as well as diesels and motorhomes. So if you've got something up there, 40th and Greenway is the closest shop I can get you. And the process is that that we run the shops that I recommend through a really fine filter. And we need certain things like ASE certifications. We want a lot of years in service at the same facility. We want a good, clean Google record and Better Business Bureau record and all that kind of stuff. We want good reviews, and we only hold them to standards of the average of the group. So if the average of the group is 3.9 stars, almost 4 stars, then that's what they have to have. Nevertheless, Blackwell's a good guy at 40th Street and Greenway, and he's there for you. When you take your car in, ladies, oftentimes you're told to tell the shop what to do, and that typically is not a real good idea. So my suggestion would be is more than anything else, get the symptoms, but then if you want to tell the shop what to do, the shop at least has an opportunity to determine what the symptoms, whether the repair will match the symptoms. It's kind of important that happen. And so many times we do get, unfortunately, ladies, women, wives, grandmothers, girlfriends that bring cars in, and we're instructed to do some weird stuff, and it's very difficult because we'd like to know why. We've done tune-ups on cars for a bad tire. We've done some major air conditioning work for an overheated radiator. So there's lots of things that we've done, and inevitably, at the end of the day, the car's not fixed. The customer paid the bill, and to what they think is we didn't do our job right. Well, then the answer typically is we did what you told us. We didn't know that. I mean, you diagnosed it, and you told us how to fix your diagnosis. So if our fix didn't fix your problem, then you made the wrong diagnosis. But at the end of the day, Mr. Salem, once we get the car fixed, or once you get the car fixed, we'll all know whose fault it is. Is it the shop's fault, or is it your fault? So, but ladies are almost always involved in the middle of that kind of verbal transaction, and so it's in your best interest just to get as much information as you can to pass on the shop. Or if you've been married more than 10 years, you do what those ladies do, and you just say, here's my husband's cell phone. He'll explain. And have us call your husband. I'm not saying our industry's beat up or anything like that at all. There's lots of good guys. Lots of guys that have greasy fingernails that have to polish their fingernails if they're going to go someplace, and their wives make them clean their fingernails with Ajax and all kinds of stuff. But there is... The good thing about auto repair is at nighttime, we all get to go home because we know we fixed a lot of cars, and there's a huge amount of satisfaction to that. Those of you that maybe have young men or women that want to go into the automotive repair industry, I wouldn't tell them no, because it's not uncommon for technicians that are an ASE master or somebody who has more than 10 years, and maybe even a heavy line guy that works on big trucks and big trailers, versus some quick lube guy that's just going to change oil and filters and check the tires and the fluids and the belts and the hoses, because those are the two ranges, heavy line all the way down to oil changes. There's lots of guys on the heavy line side that make well over $100,000 a year on a 5-day week and have a 401k and half hospitalization. So while 100% of our industry doesn't subscribe to that, it's a good idea to look at that, or not, you know, just let them look at it and let them go out and look, because we can really use a lot of people. Now, there's schools in town that you can go to, and I would probably contact a couple of shop people that you know and ask them about what school they went to or where they got their experience, because some of those schools can put those kids in debt to $30,000, $40,000, $50,000. And it takes a while to crawl out of that big hole. So as far as I'm concerned, I like AAI here in town. And one of the reasons I like it is because many of the Indian tribes in the state of Arizona send young men and women to this school. And we've had numerous from the Navajo Nation work for us, and we were terribly impressed with their work ethic and their skills that they got. They were taught at school. So, and it was a manageable amount of money and debt, although I think the Indians participated to a large extent in the schooling and education after high school, but I'm not sure. Nevertheless, that's just my idea. It's also important to know that we're never going to run out of car repair shops, because there's always going to be cars, and there's always going to be tires that need to be rotated and oil that need to be changed. And in spite of this big thing about electrical stuff, we've already been through that before. We went through that when they took points and condenser away from us, and we went to electronic fuel injection. We were scared to death that we wouldn't be able, or electronic ignition. We were scared to death that we wouldn't survive if we didn't have points and condenser and distributor cap and rotor. Today, we have spark plugs and spark plug wires, and we don't have distributor. We don't have a cap and a rotor. We have a crankshaft sensor and a camshaft sensor. So we've survived all of these things. We went from a 3,000-mile oil change to a 10 and 15,000-mile oil change. We thought we'd sure go broke because we couldn't change your oil. Which brings me up to my last point. We're going to be here for another hour and a half, so you're always welcome to join us, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Many of you have cars that the owner's manual specifically says you should be on an 8 or 10 or 12 or 14 or 15,000-mile interval, and you're being told by your shop that that's not for Arizona. That's a bald-faced lie. That manual's written for every place that car is driven in the world and every place that car is sold in the world. And if it's got a premium oil in it, then the stopping point or the recall point or the interval between oil changes is going to be 10 to 15,000 miles. What's going on right now in our industry is we have a significant amount of auto repair facilities, from the chains to the independents to the dealers to all and specialty shops, that are telling customers, I'm going to sell you a premium oil change, which can be $100 to $150. But then on the door sticker, on the window sticker, they bring you back in 3,000 or 5,000 miles. That's just simply fraud. We're not supposed to do that. If we're going to do a $150 oil change with synthetic, we better put you on 10 or 12 or 15,000 mile recall based on your owner's manual. There's no excuse for us to put an expensive oil in and then drain it at 3,000 miles or even at 5,000 miles. That's just not right. But you see, if I only see you once a year, I only get, and I say I, the industry, we only get to bite on you once a year. So we get to say, you know, an oil change, but maybe an air filter and an air conditioning service, maybe a tire rotation, check the brakes. Well, that's once a year, but in the old days, we saw you three times a year and four times a year. So we got to see you three times a year, and that was pretty cool. It was different. So that's what's going on right now. It's going on a lot. So just beware, and the default is, let me get my owner's manual out, and would you show me where it says that I have to change all my fluids at 30,000 miles? Because it used to be 30, and now it's 100 or 150,000 miles. So there again, we have all those fluid changes, and we're selling the heck out of them, but in reality, you're not due for them for 100,000 miles on the newer model cars. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960, and we'll be right back. 34 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem. Welcome to the show. It's called The Car Show, and I'm Mark Salem, and I'm an ASE Master Technician, and I've been working on cars. Well, I started pumping gas in 68, and I opened my own shop in 79, and I'm still there. This isn't about my shop. This is about your car questions and car problems. So you're welcome to join us, and you do that by giving us a call at 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. Gil will answer the phone. He'll ask you what your name is, and he'll whisper in my ear that you've got a caller, and we'll go to you when we, as soon as we can. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Kurtz Auto Repair. He's up at I-17 and Bell Road, the northeast corner. Kurtz has been around a long time, as in all the shops that I tell you about. He's been around since 1987. He works on domestic and foreign, and he works on gas and diesel, and he has ASE-certified technicians. And between Kurt and Eric, there's really nothing they can't fix. Eric is the younger generation, very much like my son Alan, and Kurt and I are the older generations, and we're both certified, and we're both master techs, but the young guys have a better grasp on the newer model cars, especially the computer operation. So Kurtz can do everything from an oil change to figuring out why, when you turn on your turn signals, the windshield wipers flap. He can do that. So that's Kurtz Automotive, I-17, and Bell Road. Okay. I'm sorry in advance to the wives that have to listen to this, but my family's decided to sell a very special car. Way back when, they made a Corvette. It was called a Z06, and they made one of the best years was the 2006 Z06. So we had a Corvette come in, and he hired us to put a twin-turbo system on it. Now, the twin turbos, what we're doing is, instead of the engine just inhaling air, just like you inhale air yourself, we actually are going to put an air hose, and when you inhale, we're going to squirt compressed air in, and we're going to fill your lungs up extra good with air. More than you can suck, we're going to pressurize your lungs. That's what a turbocharger does. The Corvette kit has turbochargers that go on the tailpipes at the back of the car. We have to run tubes through the body of the car to the engine compartment. Anyway, we built this car. It's a manual transmission, black-on-black Z06, heads-up display. It's loaded. Today it has like 26,000 miles on it. It's a 15-year-old car. So I took my truck down to the shop this week, and I asked the kids if they would do all the fluids. It's 140,000. It's due for all the fluids and 150. 140,000, all the fluids, rotate the tires, check the brakes, just go bumper to bumper, clean the windshield, have it detailed, and clean all the horse manure out of the bed of the truck. And so they said they would. And I said, I need a car to drive. Who wants to give me one? And Alan says, well, nobody's driven the Corvette in a long, long time. He says, why don't you drive it? And I said, oh, gosh, okay. This car is an unbelievable car. I drove it from there to Payson yesterday and had a lot of fun. And I did a lot of things that I wouldn't have done with my wife had my wife been in the car. But I want to tell you something, and I'm an older guy, you know that, but driving that car just makes you feel like you're 20 again. But even more important, it has such, and even though it's 15 years old, it just is, just the footprint and how it drives and how it accelerates and all that kind of stuff is just unbelievable. So this 2006 Z06 twin turbo Corvette, the kids and my wife and I have decided that no one's getting any use out of it. It sits inside the toy box, which is a large garage we have, and we're going to sell it. So it's $60,000. $60,000, just 26,000 miles, 2006 Z06 twin turbo. It had a heads up display where you can put some of the gauges and stuff in the windshield, and it even measures G's if you're going to be turning left or right, and the car will go through the curves with a 2G reading, but I would suspect I could probably hit 4 or 5 if I really was the only one on the road. But 2 just felt like nothing. Nevertheless, it's black on black, and it's got a black interior, and everything works. So if you, there's going to be somebody out there that goes, that's a car I've always wanted, and I can now afford it. And we have all the paperwork. We have all the maintenance records. We have all of that. So if you're interested in a 2006 Z06 with twin turbos, which is a very, very fast car, this car ran, if I'm not mistaken, an 11 second quarter mile at Firebird. But then we were kicked out of Firebird because we went too fast. And we went down there with the intention of just running a quarter mile on it. I think it was a tall 11 or a short 12. And we just did a 2-3 shift. And we drew straws to who was going to drive it. I didn't get to drive it. But at the end, after they got down to the end, of course, we were in big trouble because we ran really fast. And it was on a 2-3 shift. So anyway, if you're interested, Mark at MarkSalem.com is my email address. Mark with a K at MarkSalem.com. Now, if you want to call in and you want to talk about your car, or you have a question, or you and your husband are arguing about what you should do on a car, then I can help you with that. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. And it's easy for me as long as I get to ask questions. That's really what's kind of important. It's the give and take. So I'm happy to hear the story. I'm happy to hear the symptoms, but then I need to ask questions. Does it do it hot? Does it do it cold? Does it do it fast? Does it do it slow? Does the vibration come and go? Those are the kinds of questions that I need to ask. So one more time, 602-508-0960. Anyway, 602-508-0960. Let me tell you about another good shop, Action Auto Repairs, up at I-17 in Deer Valley. Full-service, family-owned auto repair shop. Serves Deer Valley and North Phoenix since 1983. Tom and his staff are well known for quality workmanship and diagnostic skills. And really good customer service, fast turnaround time, and they've got ASE Master Certified Technicians. That means the guy has not just passed one of the 8 tests, he's passed all 8 of the tests related to the repair of your car. And I want to tell you, there's most of us, and I'm a master, there's most of us that didn't get that the first or the second or the third time we tried. It is a very sophisticated, very in-depth analyzation of your skills on newer model cars. So that's Action Auto Repair. I've known Tom since 1983. He's a good guy. I-17 in Deer Valley. Let's go to the phones and talk to Greg. Greg, good morning.
Good morning, Mark.
Yes, sir.
I've got 2 questions. Same vehicle. On my way back from Colorado, and having some heating coolant issues. 03 Ram with the diesel. We did a coolant flush before the trip, and we always ran kind of highway speed right around 200, 205. But since we did the flush and a new thermostat, we're running like 210. And when I get it passing speed, it's jumping up 20, sometimes 30 degrees. So as long as I stay under, I'm staying under 65, it'll keep me at 210. and the fans aren't coming on, but not sure what's going on.
I wouldn't be worried about it. The those numbers that you gave me are normal. I expect them.
So when I'm passing, it's almost, it's saying the red line here for the temp is 245, and I'm getting real close to that every time I pass.
Okay.
And I don't never had that problem before.
Okay.
Even with the trailer.
Okay, you're making a mistake by bringing that in, because the answer to that situation will be after you fix it. So, here's the deal. We now know, like we didn't before, that the biggest problem with our oil was that it was full of water. And it's because we had 180-degree thermostats in there, and we never got it up to operating temperature, and we never got it past 212, where the water would turn to a vapor and the PCV valve would suck the water moisture out of your engine and send it out the tailpipe. Well, as you know, in the early 90s, we decided to, hey, let's do something different. We need cars to run 220. I run my truck, and I'm like you.
Diesel? Now,
mine's a diesel.
Okay.
I'm hauling four horses and a whole bunch of hay, and I've got my foot pretty close to the floor, and my engine's been tricked up a lot, and so it pulls really, really well. But if I'm in the 240 mark, I don't care. I'm okay. Now, keep in mind that the water boils at 212, but we move up that temperature to a non-boil to 240, 260 because we put it under 12 to 14 pounds of pressure. So the old pressure cookers are a good example of what we're thinking about. But I think, how many miles are on it?
Oh, we're almost 200.
Okay. I think what you're showing is a radiator that's partially plugged. You're not going to flush it out either. I think because the faster you go, the more water you're running through the rows of the radiator. And if, let's pretend that 15% of those rows were plugged, then that means the water is being pushed through the rest of the railways that go horizontal. Well, when you lose a certain portion of your radiator, then the water goes through the radiator faster than it would otherwise go through. And when the coolant goes from one side of the radiator to the other, we want it to drop off 10, 15 degrees. But if half the radiator is plugged up, now we're running all that water through half the radiator. Well, when it goes through the radiator fit, the tubes, it's going at 100 miles an hour. It doesn't have time to drop off its heat, so therefore we have a problem. So if what you're saying is when I'm running and gunning, I'm up to the 240 mark and I'm uncomfortable and it's something I never had before, it's not, you didn't cause the problem. It was there. It's just
okay,
but I would say that the radiator that's somewhere between 10 and 20% restricted. If you had a temperature gun, you could actually gun the radiator, and you could say as you went down from the top to the bottom, and you went every tube. Every time you saw a tube, you'd gun it.
Okay,
you'd probably find one or two of them that are a lot colder than the other ones.
So it so that might be, and you're saying cannot be flushed at this point. Replace it.
No, you're never gonna. Yeah, when you take it apart, you can bust a plastic tank off the end of it and look inside, and you'll see that it's just white. It's just white calcium that's just built up, and you can chisel it off with a hammer and a chisel, but you're not gonna flush it out. And there's nothing. If you put anything in there to eat that up, it'd eat up the water pump seals and everything else. So.
Okay. You recommend just going with a OEM to replace it, or
well,
with hauling lots of things? What?
I chop price because. First of all, there is no such place as an OEM. They buy radiator from somebody who's already built it, and that guy sells it to 20 people who put it in 20 different boxes. So the OEM myth is this. I can make a lot more money if I tell you it's OEM.
Right.
So I can buy it down here, but if it's supposed to be $180, I can actually charge $220 if I represent it as an OEM. It's the perception. Now, I don't do that, and I know lots of guys don't do that, but we used to.
They tell me to get a Cummins thermostat, I've had multiple guys with thermostat. Do I really?
Oh, it's a craziness. So show me just query Chrysler thermostat. Where is it made? There's no way that all the car manufacturers have factories that make all their parts. there's just no way. AC Delco probably makes half the mass airflow sensors for the General Motors line. And when you get on the internet, you can find, once you identify the part number, you can find 10 different boxes that that part comes in.
Okay.
And so this whole idea about, and then it just wads up my panties something fierce when I hear these wise tales that you have to use. No, my wife is shaking her head at me right now. She just walked through the office. I'm talking about my panties again. Yes, I am. When I hear that you have to use a Chrysler thermostat, that is just such a joke. And here's what men won't say. They won't come back and say, well, I put three of them sons of gun in there and it didn't change anything. Yeah. So there's only four companies that make oil in the United States: Mobil, Shell, Phillips 66, and Chevron. Every oil you buy comes from their big bulk tanks. And it's just in a different can. So if I were you, first of all, go to Rock Auto and look for your radiator and look at that. I like okay. Rock Auto because you can actually look at the pricing structure and there's a relationship between that and the quality. So I would start there okay. in your search, and they'll ship it to your house anyway. And I don't do commercials for Rock Auto, and they don't pay me. It's just I'm giving you the best advice I can give you.
So I'm okay getting home, even if I'm riding up around 230, 240.
I'm not worried about that. At 260, okay. 260, 270, we're going to turn it to a vapor. We're going to turn okay. the liquid to a vapor, and you can't pump vapor. And so at that particular point, you're going to be in distress. So, but okay. but did you have a Cummins? What year is it? An 03?
03, yeah, it's a 5.9.
Okay. Well, mine's a 6.7. And I have a Case 570 tractor I've pulled with mine. I've got a Bobcat I've pulled with mine. And when I'm going up and down to Payson, I like to just go with traffic, and I'm capable of doing that. But I see mine in the 240, 250 range. And sometimes I can turn off the air, and the air conditioning, the condenser is in front of the radiator. And when you're running your air, the condenser gets warm, and so it actually adds heat to the radiator. So when I shut the air off, I see a needle drop about the width of the needle. And so there is some science associated okay. with turning off your air conditioning, because now we're not superheating the air before it gets to the radiator. Another thing, too, is drop a gear. Bring the RPMs up and see what that does to your temperature.
Now, it raised. I did that, and it jumped up quite a bit.
Okay, do you ever hear the fan
clutch? The
more
clutch? RPMs.
Okay, do you ever hear the fan clutch lock up?
Lock up? I hear it come on. Is that what you mean?
Yep. Come on. Sounds like a big whirlwind underneath the hood, and then the
raise up. Yeah, I can hear it. Yeah, about 217, 220, it comes on.
Okay, good. That's where I want it to be. I want it to be around the 220. I want to hear it raise its ugly head and start howling like it sounds like you downshifted a gear. Sounds like the RPM okay. just doubled. So we're on the same wavelength. Here's the thing. When we start going past your cap's, I think, is a 16-pound cap. If we start going past your cap, then you got to stop. You got to fix it. That's the upper limit. When we start developing so okay. much pressure, we overcome the cap, and we're spitting into the coolant jug, that's when you got to stop, okay?
Okay.
All right, good enough. Good luck to you. That's what we do. We do car repair and fundamental knowledge, and I'm not the only guy in town that knows this stuff. There's a whole bunch of guys that are my peers. There's a whole bunch of guys that are better than I am. There's a whole bunch of guys that have really great shops. You can find all that on my website, marksalem.com. But more important than anything else is, see how that give and take is? Where's the needle at? Under what conditions is it at? What have you done? The flush that you did really has nothing to do with what's going on right now, so forth and so on. That give and take is important. And there's three answers. Ladies, I'm not talking to you. And when it comes to car repair, this discussion next in my mouth is not related to you. When we ask a question, there's three answers. Yes, no, or I don't know. And we don't need to tell the ladies that. We sometimes need to tell other genders that. Yes, no, or I don't know. And that's kind of how it works. And a lot of times the conversation is trying to steer the advisor in a direction, and it's just not a good idea. So I just love the give and take, and his 5.9, I'm very, very familiar with his diesel motor. We've worked on hundreds and hundreds, if not 1,000 or more of the 5.9s. We've done overheats on them, but we've done them on the GM 6.6 diesel motor, and we've done them on the 5.9 and the 6.7 Cummins and the 6.0. God, have we done overheats on 6.0 liters on the Ford diesels. But then they've got a 6.7, and it has been a really nice engine that really made the other engine it replaced even look worse. So the biggest boondoggle in the dealer, in the diesel application was the 6 liter on the Ford truck. And it took forever for somebody at Ford to raise their hand and said, we screwed up. They tried everything imaginable. They put fan clutches on them. We were overheating. We had water in the oil. We did this. We did that. You did this. You did that. You should have overheated. You probably overheated it. You did. Oh, on and on and on. And today we know that water got into the engine because of your gaskets and because of the fit and because of a lot of different things, not to mention that we had porous metal in the engines. But I can safely say that most all the 6 liters, I would say 99% of the 6 liters that experience these problems are either in the junkyard or they're on the road, and the ones on the road have been fixed because they couldn't survive under those conditions back then. So if you have a 6 liter and you're not having any problems with it right now, especially with water in the oil or oil in the water or it drinking oil and stuff like that, then in reality you've been fixed. That motor's been worked on. And with the correct and correct procedure and the correct parts to fix the problems that it came with. But that's the way it is. All righty, 602-508-0960. That's the number. We're going to take a break, but at the top of the hour, it's going to be about a four-minute break, four or maybe even five. But if you want to wait, you can. 602-508-0960. My website is marksalem.com. You can also send me an email, and my email address is mark@marksalem.com. mark@marksalem.com. And if you'll include your phone number, a lot of times I don't want to type for the rest of my life, so I'd prefer to call you, and obviously I call from a blocked line, but I'll send you an email telling you that I'd like to call you. I'm going to call from a blocked line, and then I'll wait 15-20 minutes and call you. So 602-508-0960. My name is Mark Salem. We have another hour of Car Talk coming up right after this, and so we'll see you on the other side of the break. 4 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock, my name is Mark Salem. We're here for another hour. It's called The Car Show, and you're welcome to join us under the hood with Mark Salem. We're here on the Patriot, KKNT 960 AM, every Saturday from 10 to 12, Arizona time. So if you'd like to join us, the lines, we have open lines, 602-508-0960. Real quick, before we've got callers, Auto Dynamics is Sun City's largest and most trusted source for complete automotive services, says me. They're family-owned and operated since 82. They do high-quality service. At Automotive Dynamics, their staff and mechanics are not paid a commission or a percentage of your repair bill. Therefore, the staff and the ownership can ensure they don't sell unnecessary parts or repairs. So if you're looking for a good shop in Sun City, I can only recommend Auto Dynamics, the north side of Grand, just west of 99th Avenue. And I've known Chuck since the 1960s when he ran a gas station. And I got to go over there and every once in a while wash a window and help out the island guys when I was really young. So I've known the family for a very long time. Deborah, thank you for holding. How can I help you?
Hi. Thanks, Mark, for taking my call.
You bet.
I've called before, and this last segment you had was very educational. I really appreciate it. That's why I like to listen to you.
Thank you.
Something every time. You're welcome. I've had an issue. I've got a 2010 Toyota Corolla. And I bought it in 2011 when it was 1 year old. And it's now 2021. So for 10 years, I've had issues with the brakes. And I've had things, all kinds of things done to them. I've been to dealers. I've been to small shops. I've been to a guy that worked the oil fields who had an M&P license, all kinds of things. And my problem is I can't repeat it when I need to repeat it. But I know when it happens. But it's not all the time when it happens.
Okay, so just tell me what it is.
Situation like that, it is breaking where I, and sometimes it's fine, and other times it feels like I'm driving over rocks. So I think there's a flat spot somewhere. I don't know if it's rotors. I don't know what it is.
Okay,
but
well, let me ask you.
The brakes seem to be okay.
I know, Deborah, but let me ask some questions. So when you hit the brake and everything is fine, the pedal is firm. It doesn't fade away. and it doesn't move or pulsate when things are fine. Is that right?
Yes.
And when it acts up, does the pedal now pulsate, or is it soft and goes deeper into the stroke? What's the difference between okay and not okay? Describe what it is. How are you notified of a problem?
It vibrates, the whole thing, everything, even the steering wheel shakes. And I know it seems like I'm going over rocks, but I think it's probably, I'm guessing it's a flat spot, but I don't know.
Okay, but see, that confuses everybody because you're doing a diagnosis, and so you want us to go in and look for a flat spot. But let me ask you a question. When this shutter happens, I bet the steering wheel goes left and right, left and right.
No, it doesn't. Darn it.
Does it go north and south? Does it go up and down?
No, it just vibrates.
Okay, so you can feel this vibration in the steering wheel.
And the pedal, especially the pedal.
Okay.
The brake pedal.
Okay. And it comes and goes, and there's no real rhyme or reason when it happens and when it doesn't.
The only time is when I'm slowing. And I'm not sure exactly if it's like from driving real fast or driving slow. I haven't been able to figure that out.
Okay, but does it do it every single time you apply the brakes, whether you're stopping at 10 miles an hour, 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, 70 miles an hour? Does it do it every time?
I can't pinpoint it.
Okay, so it's intermittent, and the pedal shakes and vibrates. That's the problem you're looking for. Intermittently, when I apply the brakes, the pedal shakes and somewhat violently, and I can feel it, and it makes my whole body move like this, and shakes the whole car. How'd I do?
That's pretty good.
Okay, all right. It has nothing to do with what you're guessing. What's going on here is that how many miles are on your car?
Right now, 12,042.
12,000 miles?
Yeah. Okay. I don't drive much of it. Or maybe it's 120,042. If that's then 120,000.
Okay. 120,000. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Because I was going to say 12. You haven't even gone through your first brake job. Okay. Yeah. I'm pretty sure that what part of town do you live in?
On the border of Scottsdale and Phoenix.
Okay, so what, McDowell, Thomas, Indian School, Camelback, where?
Like right now I'm at Shea and Tatum.
Okay.
Cactus is 61,
can you,
61st Street.
Can you get it to happen? Can you duplicate it? Or is it so intermittent that you don't know when it's going to happen the next time? Or does it do it all the time?
No, it's so intermittent. I never know. In fact, over here, I tried to make it do it, and the only thing I could try that even came close to is when I was really slow pulling into the parking lot.
Okay.
And then I felt it.
All right. I'm going to send you to Blackwell Automotive. He's at 40th and Greenway.
Yeah. Okay.
And this is what I want you to say to him. And you're going to talk to Christy anyway. And Christy is his right-hand lady, and she's just really awesome. And so basically you're going to say, there are two times when I apply the brakes under normal conditions, there are two things that happen. Most all the time, I hit the brake pedal, and it's nice, it's firm, and I stop, and everything is fine. Sometimes when I'm driving the car, I'm going to make the same kind of stop, not a panic stop. I'm not going from a normal stop to a panic stop. I'm going from a normal stop to a normal stop. So sometimes I hit the brake, and all of a sudden the whole car shakes, and the brake pedal shakes and pulsates. How did I do? Did I describe it good?
Yes, and I'm writing it down as you tell me.
Okay. And you can have Tom or Christy call me. It's called a brake pulsation. The question is which wheel is it coming from? So if we can get it to happen, and most of us guys can get it to happen. So we're gonna put two guys on either side of us, and we're going to go down the road on Sunday morning, and we're going to apply the brakes, and everyone's going to be looking at the tires, and the guy on the right side on the car says, oh, that right front's shaking like crazy. And the guy on the left says, no, the left front's not doing that. Oh, okay, well, then it's a bad tie rod end. So then we replace the tie rod end and you'd be done. So the tires can be doing, they can be duck walking out and then they can be pigeon-toed in. Well, if you have one of them that has a lot of play in it, then it might start chattering left to right, and that's what shakes the car when you apply the brakes. So this could be a front-end part. This could be a front-end part. This could be a warped rotor. It could be a bad wheel bearing on one of the fronts. And it shakes the steering wheel and not your butt, which tells me it's in the front of the car. It's not in the back of the car, because the back of the car would shake your butt.
Oh, okay. No. Oh, interesting.
So this
is the only one that's been able to help. Thank you.
Well, no, that's because I'm asking you the right questions. And it's something, this on a 1 to 10 scale, this is a 3 or a 4 to figure out what's the matter with it. I can remember one time I had a guy come in and tell us to do 5 or 6 different things, and he got mad at me, and he said, you don't know anything about cars because you can't fix it. And I looked up all of his work orders, and I said, we've done everything you said. So he came back in, and I said, give me one more chance, I won't even charge. And he said, okay. I wasn't there. But staff gave it to Eddie, my 33-year veteran. And I've got Ron, who's been with me 26 years, and I've got Jeff, who's been with me 20 years, and I've got a lot of veterans, a lot of crusty old gray-haired guys that know cars inside and out. I'm not the only dog in that barn, I can tell you that much. So Eddie went and drove it, and he came back, and he slid the rotor off, and there was a piece of gravel behind the rotor, and it had been crushed. But you could see where it had gone back and forth. Well, because the rotor wasn't sitting flush against the hub, intermittently the rotor would wobble. And so he dusted out this rock and put it everything back together, and it fixed the car.
Wow.
And now there's lots of things it can be, but this isn't typically going to be an expensive thing. One of the things you want to do is, I'm going to drive it, get the front end to shake, and I'm going to have Eddie hang out the passenger side window, and I want to see if the right front tire's shaking. And I can look out and see the driver's side, and I want to see if the driver's shaking, because do we have a steering problem that's causing the tires to go left, right, left, right, left, right? Or do we have just one tire going left, right, left, right, left, right? That's how it's diagnosed. Tom can fix this. He can fix it. And then you tell Christy, Mark Salem said that if Tom can't fix it, he's never going to tell anybody that Tom can fix anything except put a good toilet seat cover on the public bathroom, okay? Just tell her that.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Good luck, Deborah. Ralph, tell me what you got on your mind.
Good morning, Mark. Enjoy your program.
Okay.
Mark, I'm calling to ask you to explain the purpose of the Jake brake on semi-tractors and how it works.
Oh, piece of cake. Now, are you talking about the brake that it's a handle on the dashboard and you use it to apply the brakes to the trailer?
Are
you looking on a deceleration Jake brake?
Deceleration.
Okay, fair enough. I can do that. But I think... Oh, no, I got 2 minutes to do it. Okay, I own it. I own lots of diesels, so I can tell you exactly what it is. What you're talking about is as I get to the top of the hill and I'm going down the other side, I'm going... And then all of a sudden I'm going... Right?
Exactly.
Okay. What I've done is I've shut off a bunch of valves, or somehow or another I've plugged the engine up. They do a variety of things. But what we're doing is we're going to use the engine to create compression, and we're going to slow the engine down without touching the brakes. So that deceleration, sometimes, and I'm probably going to get a little pushback from some of the really old diesel guys, but sometimes we take the rocker assembly and we move it off the valve. And so on the compression stroke, we want compression, but we'll shut off the intake so that it creates friction within the engine, and we turn the engine into an air pump and compressor, an air compressor. So by doing that, we're typically going, and a lot of times we're going to knock one of the rockers off of an intake, and I don't know if it's intake or exhaust, and so somebody needs to correct me, but we're going to knock that off, and we're going to turn it into just a big air pump, and so that slows us down, and it's a lot of fun to use. It makes a whole lot of noise, especially depending on what kind of exhaust you have. But if you're going off the top of a big hill and you're pulling the trailer, when you flip your Jake, then you're going to be going the whole way down. but you're not going to be using your brakes, and your engine's going to slow you down. It's kind of like dropping the shifter from 10th to 5th. That's kind of okay. what it's all about. But we're going to use the, we're going to turn the engine and it's not going to be consuming fuel and air and making power. We're going to turn it in to where we fill it full of air, and the compression of the engine is attached to the rear tires and wheels and drive axles, and we're going to use that to slow us down. So,
good.
I know that wasn't good. The best, but you caught me with my pants down with that question.
Oh, well, I've been fascinated by it and by the noise for many years, and I thought you would be the guy who could explain it.
Well, let me tell you a real quick story, okay? I said to my guys when I bought this newest diesel, I said, I wanted a little throatier, you guys. And they go, okay, Dad, okay. My son says, okay, Dad, yeah. So I get my wife and I get the grandkids in it because I took out the bed and I put a big wraparound thing and all the grandkids have, and they're loving it. They got the air horns working and all that stuff. So we're coming from Pace, we're coming from Tempe to Payson. You get to the top of Mount Ord, on the other side, I hit the Jake brake, and you'd have thought that there was a machine gun inside the cab of the truck. It was as loud as anything I've ever heard. And immediately, my wife gave me the look of, you're about 10 seconds from dying. So I flipped the Jake back on, and I downshift a couple of gears because I need to slow down. But I'm going, holy mackerel. So when I went back to the shop, and I got to take a break, I'll finish up in just a minute. Alrighty, 20 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock, we're going to finish up with the Ralph and the Jake break, and I was telling you the story. So I get my diesel, I tell the shop, I wanted a little throatier, I've got my wife and the grandkids, we're coming down Mount Ord, I flipped the Jake brake on, and you'd have thought I was being attacked by mortars from all over. The noise was horrendous, and my wife was sitting in the passenger seat, and the exhaust pipe is on her right shoulder. There's a sleeper there, and that's where the grandkids are. Well, they're hooping and hollering, and she's using bad words. So I get back to the shop, and I give it to him. I says, we went too far, so you have to fix this. So there was a lot of quietness, and so I finally went to my son, and I said, I want to know exactly what you did to the muffler on the, and it's called Clifford. It's a big red dog. It's a big red diesel, so we call it Clifford. He goes, I don't remember. You have to talk to Adam. So I went to Adam, and I said, Adam, what'd you do? And he goes, I did what Alan told me. And I said, what's that? And he says, I stuck a 6-inch piece of pipe in there, and I just drove it all the way through the muffler. He says, I just gutted the muffler. So basically, you have a big amplifier. And I said, fine, take that off, find something that's going to quiet it down, and bill it to Alan, my son. So it was unbelievable noise. But today, it's manageable noise. It's kind of a nice throaty noise, but it's not anything that my wife uses bad words on. So that's the Jake break you're talking about. Okay, Ralph, thank you. Thank you very much. Gene, you're up next. How can I help you?
Mine's pretty simple. I recently bought a 2017 GMC Denali with the diesel engine in it.
Okay.
Does this thing have a speed limiter?
Almost assuredly it does. Almost assuredly, and it's going to be somewhere in the vicinity of 93 miles an hour, 88 to 93, maybe 95, but I doubt
99.
It.
99. I went up, you know, on a empty highway. I thought, well, let's see what this thing will go. And it just, like, got to 99, and that was it. Wow, that's okay. Kind of.
Yep, we took your throttle away from you. We're ignoring your throttle signal. We're shutting off the fuel. We're shutting off the timing. And we're going to say, Gene, stop being stupid like Mark Salem. And so 99 miles an hour, I'm surprised to hear that. I normally we send them down lower than that.
Now, can you eliminate that, or is that, like, on there forever?
Well, this is kind of a touchy situation, Gene. I've heard... I've heard.
Rumors have it.
Rumors have it. As a matter of fact, I heard not too long ago that there was this guy with a diesel truck that had a 96 or 93 mile an hour thing, and there was some kind of a programmer that you could use to take that away. And then when his wife looked at the data that was stored in this module, she found his top speed at 141. And so I think he got in a lot of trouble. And I've heard of this story and have personal knowledge of this story. But if you went in and you typed the word programmer and eliminate speed limiter, you could do that. But I also want to caution you about this. if you're the only one going to drive in the car, that's one thing. But if other people are going to drive on this, like grandkids or kids or something like that, I'd probably think twice about that.
Right.
I've been involved in a couple of those.
I understand completely.
Okay. All right. but you're right. If you took it up to 110, and then here's something else. Most of the time, the tires are not rated for more than 100 miles an hour. So the tires you have on your car could very well be rated at 90. And but I'm surprised that you went to 99, so they're probably going to be step up from there, and they might go to 105, 110. But you don't want to go 140 miles an hour with a tire that's got a top-end rating of 85.
Gotcha.
Okay?
All right. Appreciate it, buddy.
You bet. Thank you. Whew. If we haven't gotten in trouble today, Gil, yet, then I don't know where we've been. Bob, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Morning, Mark. How do you get rid of the moldy gym sock smell in a 2014 GMC Sierra pickup?
It's my understanding that ozone is what you do, and there's some car washes that can treat your car with ozone, and I think you have to. They want to do it in the heat of a summer day. They want everything to be as hot as possible. And they somehow or another are going to circulate some magic gas, and I think it's ozone, through the car. So they got a push and a suck hose that fits above the windows. And they probably put one on one side and one on the other. And they do that. That's the best I can offer you. I've heard that happen. Now, the guys that deal with fires, or you could call your insurance company and ask them, do you have someone who deals with fires and smoke smell in cars that you put back on the road? And most assuredly they do. So if State Farm is your company, say, can you put that guy in touch with me so that I can decontaminate my car, or I can do that? So that's kind of where it happens. Your car catches fire, they fix it, then they send it to have somebody clean up the inside and take the smell out of it. So, okie doke. 4 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem, and you can join us if you have a car question, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. At the first of the hour, I was telling you about my family owns a Corvette. It's a 2006 Z06, and it has 26,000 miles on it. It's been in a hermetically sealed, you know, area for its entire life. It's black on black on black on black, has black fancy wheels, and then we put a ring around the outside of the wheel. Anyway, it's for sale, and so let me tell you about it. It's a 2006 Z06. It's a manual six-speed. It's black on black. It had head-up display, 26,000 miles, and it's been stored inside its whole life. Here's the story behind it. We actually brought the car in to put a twin turbo set on it for the guy that owned it. When we put the twin turbo set on it, he just brought it back to us and said, it's just way too fast. It's nothing I want to go. So they took it down to Firebird Raceway, and I'm not suggesting this is the right thing to do, but we didn't know how fast this car would go. So somebody got in it, and we drew straws, and somebody got in it, and when the light turned green, they took off. Well, at the very end of the drag strip, all of a sudden, all these red lights and sirens came on, and we thought that the driver of our Corvette, of this guy's Corvette, had crashed it or blown up the motor or whatever. We were terribly concerned. So we kind of ran down that way outside the fence. What happened is that we ran an 890 quarter mile with a 2-3 shift, and you're not allowed to do that unless you have a roll cage and a fire suit and those kinds of speeds. So this is a 9-second, certainly a 9-second, 9 to 10-second quarter mile car with a 2-3 shift with a good launch and traction control disabled. So it's a really fast car. It's a very special car. It's nothing that you'd ever put your 16-year-old in. But this is a fun car to drive, it's a great car. It's 26,000 miles, and if you're interested, mark at marksalem.com. We want $60,000 for it. It's a twin-turboed Z06, 2006 manual transmission, and it's got every bell and whistle you can imagine. And it's a very special car. I want to get rid of it, although my wife and kids are not real happy because the grandkids are getting of age, and I know that one day the grandkids are going to be driving this car, and it's more car than they'll ever be able to handle for the first 10 years of their driving history. So that's kind of why I've overruled everybody and said, the car's going, because I don't want the grandkids in it. So if you're interested in that, or you know somebody who is a Corvette person looking for a Z06, then this is a one-of-a-kind car, because they didn't come with twin turbos. We installed it for the original owner. Then when he got in trouble at the racetrack, we bought the car back from him. So that's how it kind of happened. When you come up with a problem, oftentimes the answer is in your owner's manual. And unfortunately, many times the owner's manual is kind of nebulous about whether this is a firm number or not. The easiest way to determine that is kind of look at your gauges, because there's going to be a normal range, then there's going to be a caution range, oftentimes yellow or orange, and then there's going to be a red. And when the needle gets to the red, then that means you got to pull over and stop. When the needle is in the red, if the needle's touching the red and there are no other symptoms, then you can continue to drive normally and conservatively. So whether it's the oil pressure or whether it's the cooling system on your car, there's a real big area there that you can still drive it. I know that people get excited about the 240, 250 range on coolant temperature, but that's just the way it is nowadays. And if you had a horse trailer, or if you had you got your quad on the back, or your hunting trailer, your two axle trailer, then it's going to make a difference. But it's okay. So, and everything made certainly in the last 15 years is going to have an audible alarm when you're in an area that you don't belong. So they're going to give you bells and whistles, and they're going to talk to you, and they're going to light up your dashboard. They're going to give you plenty of notice that, and most every engine that we fix that's been damaged has been damaged because it was overheated significantly or it was run low on oil. And folks, that you can't explain that as owners of the car or the driver of the car. But before the motor self-destructed, there was red lights on the dash, there was ding-dinging going on, there was an audible alarm, the gauge was pegged, the needle was deep within the red zone.
1 minute.
There was smoke, there was steam, the car was pinging, and your answer was that you were only a mile from home and thought you could make it. Well, the mile from home cost you, $5,000-$6,000 to put the top end of the engine back together. So tow truck is just so much more. It's a better option than trying to make it home. Same way with an oil light. You have to stop. When you get red, you have to stop. Obviously, if my wife were in a so-called bad part of town, I would probably say, go ahead and drive to a safe part and then shut it off. But otherwise, if that's not her excuse and she happens to be on her way to Nordstrom's and she breaks down on the 101, and she pulls off the side of the road, I'm okay with that. I just don't want her to bring the car home where I lift the hood and the engine is one big molten mass of metal. And so we see that. And the answer is always the same. I was just a mile from home. That mile's going to cost you a lot of money. Most all of you have towing insurance on your car. Just pull over, call your towing insurance company. They'll pick up the car. They're probably going to take you home, and then have them go drop it by on your wherever your shop's at. So we see that a lot. And really and truly, when you say I was only a mile from home, the rest of the story is always bad. We'll be back. 44 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem. I'm very Saturday, every Saturday from 10 to noon. We're here talking about cars. It's a live show. We're on a 7-second or 5-second delay just because we don't want people to use bad words, and they're more worried about me than anybody else. But nevertheless, if you'd like to join us, 602-508-0960. Let me tell you about a couple of good shops. In the early 90s, I determined that because I'd been on the radio since 1988, I determined that there was a lot of shops out there that I could talk about, because the number one question was, everybody says, where's your shop? And I'd say, where do you live? So I've created a list of good shops, and these guys, here's my promise to you, these guys are so good. If you have a problem and somebody in the dispute resolution process says to the shop, you either fix it or give them this much money back, and the shop doesn't, I will up to $5,000. I will. One time we got close to that. The shop refused to make an appropriate refund on a repair that they did. I told the shop, I'm going to drop your and I'm going to give him the money, and you're no longer going to be part of it. And he changed his mind. He made the customer whole, and that was it. That's only happened one time since 1990. So we've not had any complaints. So if you go to marksalem.com, you can see the list of GERD repair shops. But I'll tell you about a diesel one, strictly diesel service and repair. Nate is a great guy. He knows more about diesels than anybody I know. He knows more about what I know about diesels 10 times tenfold. He is just a diesel extraordinaire. So strictly diesel service and repairs open Monday through Friday, and they also sell parts, those performance parts, 24 hours a day on their website. So they're at I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road, and they work on both foreign and domestic light diesel trucks, Chevy, Ford, Dodge, and some of the Isuzus and some of the other imports. So that's strictly diesel. On the other side of town, Automatic Transmission Exchange, Phil. Gosh, I've known him for a long time. He's a great guy. He knows more about transmissions than anybody I've ever met before. And he was around when the Powerglide first came out. He was around when automatic transmissions first hit the road. So if you've gone up and down Washington, you've seen him at 40th Street in Washington. And he's on the north side of the road. And he has an old transmission up on a sign. So that's Automatic Transmission Exchange. Tib, good morning. How can I help you?
Good morning. I have a 2018 Chevy Traverse. And I've been through the owner's manual a half a dozen times now, and I cannot find what interval they suggest the transmission fluid be changed. Any ideas?
I've never seen a manual that didn't have that in the maintenance schedule where they show.
I cannot find it.
Okay.
I've been on the internet, and the internet people tend to 45,000 miles, but I can't. Again, like I say, I can't find it in the manual.
Okay. You are the second person in all my life. I had one just the other day say the same thing with a Honda, and it didn't call for that. I'm troubled by that for two reasons. Number one, it leaves it open for interpretation. And what was the mileage you said that already has been suggested to you?
45,000.
Okay. See, most all the fluids in the newer model cars are of a synthetic nature, which is a far superior oil than we've ever had in our cars before. So it's a long-term oil. Typically on a transmission with a synthetic is 100,000 miles. We used to do all the fluid changes every 30. That was through the 70s and the 80s. In the 90s, we went up there towards 90 and 100 on all the major fluids like transaxles, differentials, transfer cases, transmissions, that kind of stuff. So today, it's my understanding and my impression and what we do on our own personal cars is we're at a 100,000 mile call on those cars that have been that are 10 years or newer. So that's kind of how it works, but I'm surprised. Can I ask you to send me an email?
Certainly.
Okay, Mark with a K at marksalem, Salem like the cigarette, .com. Leave your phone number there. I'd like to do a little research on this. If in fact this, and like I said, you're the second person that's come to me with this. If this is a trend where we're dropping off the mileage intervals, the service intervals, on stuff like transmissions, transfer cases, differentials, transaxles, if that's the case, we're throwing our industry into a tailspin because obviously it serves me as a shop owner to clip you at 25 or 30,000 mile intervals as opposed to 100,000 mile intervals. And I think that's really bad for our industry. We are not prepared for that. And it's already happening today. We know that it's happening today. We're getting customers that said that are they're being told by a variety, and we're talking about dealerships, independents, oil change facilities, chain stores, all of there's guys in all of those different venues of car repair that have decided that they know when your fluid should be changed, and most of the time they haven't even looked at it yet. They're just looking at the odometer, and in the old days we called that odometer surfing. So you would look at the odometer and then create a plan for maintenance based on what the odometer said, not asking, have you ever done this before? Have you ever had the brake fluid change before? Have you ever had the transmission fluid change before? It's just automatically you're due. And I think that's really bad for our industry. But what I'd like to do is I'd like you to send me an email, Tib, and tell me your make and model and even the VIN number. You can leave off the last six digits, but give me the VIN number.
Repeat your email address again.
It's Mark with a K at MarkSalem, like the cigarette, .com. Mark@MarkSalem.com. And cool. I'd like very much to call a couple of GM people that I know and ask them two questions. What is the transmission service interval? And two, is it in the manual? And if so, where? And then I'll get the answer for you. But it's not going to be till Monday or Tuesday, okay?
Not a problem, sir. I'll wait for your email.
Okay. Thank you very much, Tip. Thank you. Our industry, you have to understand, if I got to see you every 3,000 miles, I got to rotate your tires every other oil change. And I got to do a lot of things based on that 3,000 miles. When you all of a sudden we take you to a 10 to 15,000 mile oil change interval, I've lost a significant amount of sales. And that's thrown our whole industry into a tizzy for the last 10 years. And so if you're starving to death, then you're likely to start selling stuff in parameters that are not necessarily universally accepted. And we have another caller. Who might that be?
Say hello to Dennis.
Dennis, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you.
I have a Lexus ES300 2001. Transmission's never been serviced that I'm aware of, and a car has 200,000 miles on it. It's starting to, when it hits the third gear of the drive, it starts to cough and sputter a little bit. If I go to first, second, it's fine. A friend of mine put a machine on it and said there's a code that says it's a serviceable part, something about the valve body and the solenoids. Is that something I could service, or is that new tranny time?
No, I wouldn't. If you came to my shop based on what you just told me, I wouldn't want any part of any replacement. You got 200,000 miles on it. That car's been around the equator 8 times. It's you have to put that in perspective. It's 25,000 miles around the equator. It's been to the moon 3 times, because I think it's 88,000 miles to the moon. So, and so this thing is shedding metal its entire life. So we're going to have aluminum, we're going to have stainless steel, we're going to have some dirt, we're going to have some grit, we're going to have some oxidized oil particles that are rock hard. And so we're going to put a valve body that has little bitty holes the size of a sewing machine needle, and we're going to just take the pan off and put the valve body back on there and put it all back together. I want no part in that one. The success rate has to be about as much as you and I hitting the lottery in the next hour. So, no. I do think a transmission filter and filter and fluid change would be an appropriate thing. You could go with so far as to not only do the filter, but flush the transmission. And I'll tell you what, that's either going to make it better or make it worse, and there ain't no in-between. There's no in-between. And I'd tell you that if I was standing in the front counter. We're either going to make it better or it's going to be worse. And if it's worse, you needed a transmission anyway. But you just spent $200 having us flush it and changing the filter. So, but it's at best a 50-50 shot. But 200,000 miles, there's no question in my mind, for you to pump money into that transmission at 200,000 miles is a waste of time, waste of your money, too. I think you need to either let's do some fluid changes and see what happens, or let's start having somebody rebuild the transmission.
All righty. Well, I appreciate your thoughts.
Okay. Well, good luck to you, one way or the other. Good luck to you. The valve body, again, is just a piece that it electronically sends fluids in different fashions to open this area up and to close this clutch and to open this band and all this kind of stuff. And the computer is controlling all this fluid. And when you have really small particles of trash inside there, that creates problems. And the trash means it's already passed the filter. So who's next?
We have Daniel.
Daniel, good morning.
Good morning, Mark. Hey, another engine oil question for you based on your vast background. If small block Chevrolet that's been run on conventional engine oil, and then you switched over to full synthetic, have you had any experience with them having more of an affinity to leak out of seals, like the valve cover, intake manifold gaskets, or stuff like that?
That's
the rear main.
That's been a wives' tale since we started with synthetic oil and Mobil 1 days in the mid-'80s. That's been a wives' tale. If it has a leak now, and if you're putting 30 weight Valvoline in it, and you go to a 1030 synthetic, you're going to have the same leak, and it's not going to make leaks. What are you kind of a vehicle you're talking about?
95 vintage 350 Chevy.
Okay.
It went to a full synthetic, and it seems to be leaking out by the rear main, or either valve cover gasket or the intake manifold or something back there.
Or the oil pressure switch back there.
Okay.
The back of the intake manifold, yes, you're right, the rubber gasket, the valve covers, and the oil pressure switch. Does this have a two?
It wasn't leaking before, but now it is.
All right, now, what did you put in it before? What weight oil did you put in it before?
10W30 conventional.
And so then you went to a 1030 synthetic.
Yeah.
Okay.
Or 5.30.
Okay. It flows like a 5 weight when it's cold, as opposed to it flows like a 10 weight. So you got that low end sitting there. And it flows like a 30 weight. Both of them are flowing like a 30 weight when it's warm.
Okay.
So, I'd put dye in it, and I'd get a black light and wave it around the back of it, because if it's an oil pressure switch, you're talking about $40.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
All right.
And then I would do just a little bit of tension on the valve cover fork, valve cover bolts. How old is the motor? What year is it, do you think?
I'm not too. 1995.
Okay. Because at the back of some of the old small blocks, there was a vent tube that went to the ground, and under pressure from the inside of the engine would blow it. The blow-up pipe tube is what it was called. So I was trying to fish to see if this was one of those that had a freeze plug in the top of the back of the motor for the blow-by tube, but it doesn't. And so you've got the gasket, like you said, the gasket, valve cover, and oil pressure switch. This could be an oil pressure switch, and if that's the case, you're home free. You just replace that. You need a special socket to do that, but that's easy to do.
Very good.
Okay, Daniel.
I appreciate all the info.
You're welcome.
Thanks,
Drew. Good luck to you. My email is mark@marksalem.com, mark@marksalem.com. So if you have a question or a problem, you can always email me. And if you include your phone number, I'm going to call you from a blocked line. Typically, I call and you don't answer because it is a blocked line. So then I say, hey, this is Mark Salem. I'm going to call you back in about 15 minutes, 5 minutes or whatever. And I do my best I can to touch base with you. But so many times I have lots of questions. And it's just like Daniel and I right now. He's got a small block Chevy. Does it have this? Does it have that? Those are the kinds of things that we talk about. So I have lots of questions, and then he went from a 1030 to a 530, and so there's a difference in viscosity and the thickness, and in an exaggerated way, one of them's a little bit more watery consistency, and one of them's a little bit more peanut butter consistency, and that's going to change things with oil leaks. So you can understand why those questions are answered, or asked and answered, is because that helps understand it. But it's always been the rap that synthetics would cause, and right now, you know what, the number one oil I'm pouring in cars, a 020. It has the consistency of a sewing machine oil, but it doesn't turn to a tar until 500 degrees, not 300 degrees, and it flows out of the can at 60 below zero, not 20 below zero. So your 020 is a big dog heavy hitter oil that the race car people are using because it provides the best protection, but you're not going to get some old guy to put it in his car.